This is Carol Bond, returning with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, December 1st, 2015. At the conclusion of our first reading, we had been reading from Mary Hunt's article about finding money that you didn't know you had. She had asked the question about eating out at fast food places and not checking sales before going to the supermarket. She goes on in her article to say this: why pay more than the minimum payment this month? It won't make that much difference in the long run. And besides, I need to start Christmas shopping. Those three small, seemingly innocuous money issues, everyday financial decisions that pop up regularly, can end up costing thousands of dollars a year. Consider the following. It will cost at least $25 to feed a family of five at any junk food drive-thru. The food will be marginal in taste and nutrition. You could prepare a much tastier and much more nutritious meal at home for just $10. Easy. Do the math. If you do that twice a week, you're letting $780 leak out of your life. 52 times $15 equals $780 every year. If you are diligent to buy your supermarket food items only when they are on sale, don't worry. Everything goes on sale in a typical supermarket in a 12-week rotation. You'll cut your grocery tab by at least 50%. The difference between full price and sale price is stunning when everything in your cart is on sale. It'll take you 10 years and cost you an additional $10,000 in interest alone on a $100 credit card balance if you pay only the minimum amount required. See how easy it is for slow leaks to turn into big money blowouts? Then imagine those little leaks draining money from your bank account a dozen times over, month after month. When it comes to your finances, those seemingly undetectable cracks in your checking account, credit card debt, food tab, and other household expenses can seriously sideline your dreams. We'll turn now to the obituaries. Brett Edward Krieger, 49, winged his way home on Sunday, November 29th, after a valiant war on cancer. Visitation will be held on Wednesday, December 2nd, at Brittlinger and Earl Funeral Home on Oakland Avenue, Decatur, from 4 to 8 p.m. Homegoing service will be held on Thursday, December 3rd at 11 a.m. at the funeral home. Burial will follow in Steenbergen Cemetery in Mount Pulaski. Memorials can be made to the Sancris Water Fowlers Association for the Brett Krieger Memorial Youth Event. Clarence Dude Delano Matherly, 86, of Decatur, passed away on Friday, November 27th, in his home, surrounded by his family. A service to celebrate and honor his life will be held at 1 p.m. on Thursday, December 3rd, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. until service time. He will be laid to rest next to his wife at Graceland Cemetery. Military rites will be provided by the Macon County Honor Guard. Memorials can be made to cancer care specialists of Central Illinois. Donald N. Klingler, 86, of Decatur, passed away on Friday, November 27th at Eastview Terrace in Sullivan. Graveside services will be held on Thursday, December 3rd at 11 a.m. at the Macon County Memorial Park in Harristown, Illinois. Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home Decatur will be handling the arrangements. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Stephen Decatur Lodge Masonic Building Fund or the donor's choice. Julia Alice Owen, 95, of Decatur, passed into eternal life on November 29th in St. Mary's Hospital, surrounded by her loving family. Services to celebrate Julia's life will be 11 a.m. Wednesday, December 2nd, in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be 10 to 11 a.m. Wednesday in the funeral home. Burial will be in Fairlawn Cemetery. Memorials can be made to Heifer International or First United Methodist Church. Mary Catherine Latendress, 97, of California, formerly of Decatur, passed away in Redlands on November 12th, surrounded by family and friends. A mass of Christian burial will be held at 1 p.m. on Friday, December 4th, at St. Patrick's Catholic Church, 407 East El Dorado Street, Decatur, with Reverend John Burnett, celebrant. Burial will follow at St. Isidore Cemetery in Bethany, Illinois. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be made to Family Service Association, 612 Lawton Street, Redlands, California, 92373, or Redlands Racquet Club, P.O. Box 927, Redlands, California. Previously, there was a note that reads this way. Memorial Mass will be held at 11 a.m. on Tuesday, December 1st, at Holy Name of Jesus, 115 West Olive Avenue in Redlands, California. Alice Bernice Sills, 88, of Decatur, died Friday, November 27th, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Funeral service celebrating her life will be 11 a.m. Thursday, December 3rd, at St. John's Lutheran Church, 2727 North Union, Decatur, with Pastor Russell Wells officiating. Visitation will be 1 hour before the service at the church. Burial will be in St. John's Lutheran Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the church. Tanzius Logan Funeral Service and Care is in charge of the arrangements. Phyllis Ann Winterstein, 91, of the Illinois Veterans Home in Quincy, formerly of Decatur, Illinois, died Saturday, November 28, in Blessing Hospital. Memorial services will be held Thursday morning at 10 a.m. in All Faiths Chapel at the Illinois Veterans Home, with Reverend Donald Blicken officiating. Visitation will be Thursday morning from 9:30 until the time of services at the All Faiths Chapel. The Zehander Robinson Stormer Cookson Funeral Home is in charge of the arrangements. Memorials may be made to the Illinois Veterans Home Activity Fund. Lynn M. Smith, 72, of Decatur, passed away at 7:05 p.m. on Thursday, November 26th, at St. Mary's Hospital. A memorial service to celebrate Lynn's life will be held at 2 p.m. on Thursday, December 3rd, at Dawson and Wyckoff West Wood Street Funeral Home. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation from 12 till 2 p.m. on Thursday. Lynn will be laid to rest in Boiling Springs Cemetery. Memorial contributions may be directed to St. Teresa High School football program or Our Lady of Lourdes School athletic program, boys basketball. James Lloyd Jim Milby, 93, of Shelbyville, passed away at 5:40 p.m. Friday, November 27th, in St. John's Hospice, Springfield. Jim passed away peacefully with family members present. A family memorial service will be held at a later date pursuant to Jim's wishes. Arrangements are by Howe and Yaki Funeral Home, Shelbyville, Illinois. Charles M. Howell, Sr., 81, Herrick, died Saturday, November 28th. Services, 11 a.m. Thursday, McCracken Dean Funeral Home, Pena. Visitation, 5 to 8 p.m. Wednesday. Burial, Oconee Mound Cemetery. Memorials, Henton Church of God. John M. Lutz, 87, of Arcola, passed away at 12:01 a.m. on Sunday, November 29th, at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Mattoon. Funeral arrangements are incomplete at the Edwards Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, December 2nd, at the Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main in Arcola. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Thursday, December 3rd, 2015, at the Edwards Funeral Home. Reverend Ty Nickel will officiate. Burial will be in the Arcola Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the American Diabetes Association or the Kemp Church of Christ. And that concludes the reading of today's obituaries. Let's see what Dr. Roach is talking about today in his column. Dear Dr. Roach, reads the first letter, I went through many tests for a cough that lasted for 30 years. No treatments worked. The only sign my doctor could find was that my throat had scars for coughing that long. My allergy specialist had tried for years with all kinds of prescriptions to no avail. I am now living a normal life since a doctor prescribed Tramadol, 50 milligrams, twice a day. What a relief. My wife, grown children, friends, and clients are happy. And the letter is signed LG. Here's Dr. Roach's answer. I found only a single case report of Tramadol being used for chronic cough, and it was effective in that patient. The authors advised further study on its use. Tramadol is a pain medication distantly related to codeine. Its abuse potential is low, but there have been overdoses and deaths due to this drug, so I don't recommend its indiscriminate use. However, I have seen personally and received many letters from people with intractable coughing for years, so much so that I wanted to call attention to this as a possible treatment worth discussing with one's doctor for people with long-standing cough that has resisted diagnosis or treatment. I previously mentioned taking gabapentin for laryngeal neuropathy, a condition that is often unrecognized and that may present with a prolonged cough. I received many letters telling me it was effective. Tramadol at the low dose for an adult you mentioned usually is safe. Dear Abby's column today has this as its first letter. Dear Abby, today, December 1st, is World AIDS Day. With effective treatment, people with HIV can live as long as those without HIV. Fear, shame, and ignorance remain barriers to testing and treatment, which can be more deadly than HIV itself. People with HIV who are in treatment need never develop advanced HIV, formerly full-blown AIDS. Please encourage your readers, regardless of age, gender, or sexual orientation, to get tested, and if positive, to get treatment. HIV can affect anyone. And this letter is signed Mary in Frederick, Maryland. Dear Mary, I'm glad you wrote. Knowing one's HIV status is extremely important because, unlike in years past, the disease can be controlled. But in order to do that and not spread it to others, it is essential that sexually active individuals get treated, get tested, and then treated. Readers, you can be a healthy HIV positive person and control it if you know you have it and get treatment. Ask your doctor about being tested if you have one. If you don't have a doctor, contact your county health department about how to find testing and treatment in your community, or visit www.freehivtest.net for information about free tests in many areas across the nation and abroad. The next letter. Dear Abby, I am retired, divorced, and never had children. My two sisters have 4 adult children between them. Their kids are all married and have children themselves. Every Christmas there is a gift exchange, which I don't attend because I stay in Florida during the winter. At this stage in my life, I dread the holiday because it is expected that I spend a minimum of $50 per person for 24 people. I own some properties. I am desperately trying to prepare for the market. At my age, I no longer need or want anything. It has reached a point where the preferred gift is money, which isn't the idea behind the Christmas holidays. How can I politely stop this habit? And the letter is signed Mrs. Ebenezer Scrooge in New Hampshire. Dear Mrs. Scrooge, you politely stop the habit by telling your sisters in advance that you are trying to prepare your properties for sale and money is limited. Therefore, you will be buying Christmas gifts only for your younger grandnieces and nephews from now on, if you choose. Be sure to send the adults lovely holiday cards, however, so they know they are remembered. Dear Abby, besides the usual snoring most wives tolerate, I have had to endure something worse. At least once a week for the past few years, my husband will make a fist while asleep and swing it across the bed, striking me. The last time it caused a tooth to chip, and frankly, it scares me to death. He is by no means violent when awake, other than sleeping on the couch. What can I do? Signed, Black and Blue in New Jersey. Dear B&B, before your husband causes you any more physical harm, schedule an appointment for him with a sleep disorder specialist. For both your sakes, please don't put it off. Your doctor or medical insurance carrier should be able to refer you to one. Today's editorial page leads off with this column under the category Our Views. The headline is Low Hopes for today's meeting. The handful of people who could end the state's budget stalemate are scheduled to meet today in public and private. We'd call it a circus, but that might be an insult to the clowns and elephants. Governor Bruce Rauner, House Speaker Michael Madigan, Senate President John Cullerton, Senate Minority Leader Christine Rodagno, and House Minority Leader Jim Durkin are set to meet at 2:30 p.m. today. The meeting will start with public statements by each of the participants, followed by a private meeting to discuss if there's a way to end the budget stalemate that began July 1st. The acrimony between Rauner and the Democratic leadership, primarily Madigan, is so large that the group hasn't met since May. The result has been two concurrent problems. Without a budget, social service agencies have scrambled to stay open. Universities have had to cope without state aid, and other governmental units have had to find ways to do without the money they rely on for services such as snow plowing and 911 emergency telephone service. The second problem is that a lot of government spending has continued at roughly the same rate as the previous fiscal year. But the revenue from the previous year has been reduced thanks to the rollback of the income tax rate. The result is that the longer the state goes without a budget, the further behind it falls. Lawmakers have taken sides in the disagreement, largely along partisan lines. So it's not a surprise to hear Senator Gary Forby, Democrat of Benton, place all the blame on Rauner. He said that he's eager to see the governor offer a plan to end, quote, the impasse that he created. The fact is that Democrats have veto-proof majorities in both the House and Senate. If Democrats had the political will and were willing to take the heat, they could approve whatever budget they wanted, along with the accompanying tax increases. Instead, they have spent the summer and fall trying to pin the blame for years of budget incompetence on Rauner. Madigan has shown in recent weeks that he's still more interested in playing political games and putting non-winning proposals up for votes rather than solving any real problems. At the same time, Rauner has placed too much emphasis on anti-union rhetoric and not enough on solving a long list of financial problems the state faces. The result is the current gridlock, which is unlikely to be solved today. However, the solution to the stalemate will only occur if the leaders communicate. So while expectations for today should be low, we agree with Senator Bill Brady, Republican from Bloomington, quote, a meeting is better than no meeting, end quote. Here's a piece of good news from Minneapolis. The headline is, couple drops $500,000 in red kettle. The Salvation Army has wasted little time cashing this donation bucket check. Salvation Army officials in Minnesota and North Dakota say a couple dropped a $500,000 check into a red kettle Saturday outside a Cub Foods in suburban Minneapolis. Spokeswoman Annette Bauer said it's the biggest check ever in the Minneapolis area and likely the biggest ever in the two states. Bauer said the couple has a history of donations and prefers to remain anonymous. She said they alerted Salvation Army officials that the check was coming and asked them to open the kettle and remove the check before volunteers who count donations could see their names. Bauer called it an astonishing gift at a time when the division was running about $500,000 behind the same point last year. Here's a brief article on the sports page. It happens to be about the University at Las Vegas, UNLV. UNLV is keeping its Rebels nickname and Hey Reb mascot in spite of critics who said they should be changed because the imagery harkens to the Confederacy, citing newly released historical research that concluded the moniker was not intended as a reference to the Confederacy. The president of the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, UNLV, issued a statement Monday saying the school must keep the name and mascot. He said Rebels expresses UNLV's entrepreneurial spirit, and he noted overwhelming support for the term. Quote, "It was coined as our young institution was fighting to establish its own identity, and it has come to represent the very independence and spirit that embodies both UNLV and Southern Nevada." President Len Jessup wrote in a message to the UNLV community, quote, "It is clear that Rebels is central to our shared identity and represents the broadest definition of the term," end quote. Some have called for the name and mascot to be changed, saying the mustachioed cowboy hat-wearing character appears to be a Confederate soldier. A small article about home health workers. A judge has ordered Illinois to pay more than $13 million to cover the cost of health insurance for home health care workers. SEIU Healthcare Illinois took legal action against Governor Bruce Rauner and Comptroller Leslie Munger earlier this month to force the payments. The union said nearly 5,000 healthcare assistants could lose insurance December 31st if the state doesn't pay. Rauner's office said there wasn't spending authority to make the payments because of the budget impasse. But St. Clair County Judge Robert Lechien ruled Wednesday that Illinois can't violate its contract with the workers because lawmakers can't agree on a budget. He criticized a, quote, "fiddle while burning posture," unquote, of the governor and legislature and ordered the state to pay within 10 days. This has been Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated December 1st, 2015. I look forward very much to reading with you again.
School dropout, an honorary degree in 1985. The small-scale event is not generating the same buzz as Sinatra's 100, an all-star Grammy concert on December 2nd in Las Vegas, featuring Tony Bennett, Lady Gaga, Celine Dion, and other performers. Even so, the Hoboken Historical Museum has seen a 300% jump in visitors since opening a Sinatra exhibit in early August and has hired extra staff, director Robert Foster said. "Whenever we do something on Sinatra, the museum tells us people come out to the woodwork," Foster said. "We enjoy the fans because they're so loyal and he means so much to them." Lacking any major item that belonged to Sinatra, the museum tells a story through media displays and visitors receive a map with their $4 admission that features Sinatra sites. Greta Wilson, who was born and raised in Hoboken, said Sinatra is always the first thing that people ask her about when they learn where she's from. "They always want to know if I've seen him in a store or a movie theater or in some place in town, and if he was like a regular person, or if he acted like a stuck-up movie star," she said. A plaque marks the former building at 415 Monroe Street, where Sinatra was born in 1915 to middle-class parents. He had a nice life, said Chuck Granata, who co-produces and engineers the Nancy for Frank satellite radio program with Sinatra's oldest daughter, Nancy. Frank was not poor and probably was one of the more fortunate kids growing up. His mother made sure her son had nice clothes and even had a car, which helped him gain a spot in the 1935 when singing group Hoboken 4. They won first prize on the national radio program for amateur entertainers, and Sinatra started along a path that led to big bands, Bobby Soxers, and fame. However, Hoboken residents felt Sinatra had forgotten them, reflected in the reception he got when he rode on a float in 1947 parade and was pelted with tomatoes, according to the biographer Ed Chirac. Sinatra later called Hoboken a sewer. Urban blight plagued the city until 1970, when the New Yorkers started crossing the Hudson River to renovate brownstone and build condominiums. The icy relationship between the began to thaw in 1979 when the city changed River Road to Sinatra Drive. A park and a city's main post office would also bear his name. Hoboken these days reflects Sinatra's cool, where fashionable young hipsters roam the city's bars and restaurants after spending the working day in Manhattan. This has been Samantha Barnes with the Daily Herald and Review, and for November 30th, 2015, and I look forward to reading with you again soon.